hold up.
Ted, I want to ask you a question real quick.
Let's just keep it real, straight shot with no chaser. I'm going to get a little bit rough. I'm here for those who really believe in the American process. All of us. Straight shot, no chaser. With your girl, Tesla Figaro, on the Black Effect Podcast Network.
What's happening, straight shooters? This is Tesla Figaro. Thank you so much for joining me for another episode of Straight Shot No Chaser. Today is very important because we have an opportunity to sit down with two ladies I have had an opportunity to know over the last year. When I met them, it was like day one, we became family. You have seen them all over the TV, not just these two ladies, but also their family, due to the tragic and unfortunate death of George Floyd. He certainly was more than just a name and a hashtag to these young ladies. They were actually his cousin. And let me not say young ladies, these are full grown women, by the way, but certainly more to them than just a cousin, just a hashtag, just someone in the news about social justice, but a family member, more like a brother, a sibling, someone they grew up with. And over the last year, you've heard a lot of conversation from the family, you know, on what it meant to lose George as a person. You've also had an opportunity to watch them as they went through the trial, which we now know was a successful conviction, and the ups and downs that they have experienced over the last year, I really can't even put into words. Most occasions you see them on TV 5 to 7 minutes and we're asking questions and they're answering questions and we kind of move on to the next topic. But today I wanted you to have an opportunity just to know who they are on a personal level and why they started the George Floyd Foundation. So welcome my guests, co-founders of the George Floyd Foundation, Sarita Tate and Tara Brown, my sisters. Good hello, ladies.
Hello, Tara.
Well, you cannot see them because obviously it is a podcast, but I'm looking at Tara, who is always smiling, and we tease her about that all the time. She's just grinning, grinning, grinning. If we go out somewhere, everybody makes a beeline right to Tara because she has the most engaging smile. And that is what I remember walking into Sarita's house. This was, I guess, just a couple of days after everything happened. And the first thing I saw was Tara's smile. And the second thing was smelling the food, because these ladies can get down on cooking for real, for real. I told them I'm not getting ready to play games with them, gaining weight, playing with these women, because they cook for real. So despite, and I'm saying that to paint the picture, that when you walk in and you smell the soul food, and we know that soul, you know, soul food takes care of the soul, the aroma, the smell, the loving embrace, the smile. I just immediately hugged them because not just because of the loss, but you could truly feel the family connection. And I started calling them cousins because I was like, it's truly like meeting a cousin, you know, that you just never met. And I just want to say before we get into this, that I have watched these ladies endure so much. And I'm not just talking about just the case, because this is important to say. What a lot of people don't know is when you're working with families, there's a lot that goes on with families outside of just the case. So when the case happens and now you have to grieve in public and have cameras in your face in public and remain dignified and mature and keeping the main thing the main thing, I have learned so much from these two women. And I want to give them their flowers because I've worked with a lot of family members, and I tell them this all the time. I have learned so much from these two women on really being up to the task to keep the main thing the main thing. So I want to say that first off, meeting Sarita and Tara, you know, with coming in and saying, you know, we want to fight for justice. One of the first things that we talked about was how do we make, I don't want to use say count, because no, we certainly shouldn't have lost George. But it was always their concern to make sure that it's not in vain, that we get something out of this, that there's more to just saying, you know, we lost him and we got a conviction and, you know, how do we move forward? So from day one, and a lot of folks don't know this, day one, it was really a concern of you two to make it mean something worthwhile that you can be proud of. So I want to ask you, Tara, and then Sarita, and we're going to talk about George and your relationship with him. But this part is so impactful because the media doesn't really spend a lot of time talking about the foundation. And I wanted to do that, you know, today. Why was it, Tara, that you felt the need or the urgency to do something? Is it because you were in a place of, I think most people feel defenseless. They feel, you know, I can't do anything. I can't bring the person back. I can't make the trial go any faster. I can't be the jury. I can't be the judge. So a lot of times all a family does have is, what can we do so that I can find at least a better way to grieve, to know that it matters? Can you speak on that a little bit, Tara, and why doing this type of work in the foundation was important to you?
Absolutely. It was important to me because you kind of touched on it. I mean, it's very overwhelming to have something like this happen. And nobody on earth could have predicted that the movement that was sparked because of the way that George was killed would happen the way that it did. I had no clue. I just knew that we had to do something. And I knew it was time for things to change. Something has to change because it was happening too often and it's still happening. Which is why it's so important for us to have started this foundation in his name. And this is one way to honor him for sure. Other than that, it is a way for us to build a legacy. Hopefully we can, you know, we're going to be in a position where we can be a catalyst for the change. We'll be working directly with the folks to change legislation, to pass the bills that will, you know, change the way police are handling police brutality. We want to change those things. And so this definitely gives us a platform. The other reason is we want to help people. We want to be able to change lives. And if we can provide opportunities and resources for people who are much like him or have the kind of background or upbringing that he had, then that's going to make all the difference in the world for us. It's all about the legacy now.
You said something there that I want people to know about you guys from a personal level. You said we want to help people. And I want people to know what that means. As I got a chance to know you guys, you know, Sarita, Terry, you talked a lot about how your family was, you know, there for George and growing up like siblings. And you talk a lot about Miss Sissy and always having a meal for somebody. And just when I'm around your family, your parents, you know, we've had this conversation. In fact, I think I got kind of emotional the other day when we were on the phone because I told Sarita that I wanted you to tell your parents how important just them saying, Teslin, thanks for what you do, because I don't have parents and you guys are still. So for those who don't know, if I didn't say it again, you're both sisters and I don't have parents, certainly not a mother and a dad, you know, at the same time that are still together and supportive, you know, of what you're doing. You know, for those who don't know, your mom is the secretary for the foundation. You know, your dad is always around. It's not a time you don't go. This is truly like the movie Soul Food. You know, you go over and the whole family's there, several generations. And that's such a blessing. And it has been, it has touched me in a way that I haven't had. And so, Sarita, speak to a little bit about when Tara says we want to help people. Let the people know, like, what that really means for your family, that this is not just something you started, you know, doing yesterday when it comes down to, you know, taking care of your community. How is it that your family did that when they barely had even enough to take care of themselves? What did that mean in CUNY Homes?
Well, I think it goes even further back than my aunt. It really started with my grandmother and just really establishing the one thing that we always had plenty of was love to give for anybody who needed it. And also we made beans and rice and whatever we had stretch out. And let me tell you, it's no small feat to have just rice and gravy to be the only thing. And you make you feel like that you have a piece of pork chop or a piece of steak there too. But that's something that our grandmother taught us how to do with very minimal. You'd be able to have a meal, and that is to do like a, you know, you have the bread, you can make a biscuit and you can do a gravy with some rice and beans and you're good to go. So for us, it comes from a place of understanding that basically that we were all placed here to be of service to other people. And maybe my grandmother didn't articulate it that way, but we certainly understood from early on that, you know, you never turn away somebody who is hungry or someone who needs a place to lay. And so that started with my grandmother, and it was carried on with all of her children, to include Perry's mother and my mother. So in the CUNY Homes, even though they grew up in a small rural area, she transferred that right into the heart of the inner city. And so people knew Miss Sissy was a place that you could always go to and get something to eat. And if you needed to lay down, get a nice place to rest or whatever, she was always willing to give that of you. And it wasn't a big place. It was very small. But if you could find a spot in there to lay down, people knew that they could come in there. And that's just the kind of person that she was. That's how my mother is. And that is the crux of why our family is that way. And so to help people, whether it is, you know, to give them a ride or give them, you know, some change to catch the bus, whatever it is that we could do to be able to help somebody, that's the way we're raised to do it. And it's something that we've carried on as well. So I will always think about the possibility that it could be you. And so my thought process is, as I'm helping other people, is that my prayer is that it never comes to a place that I will need that. But if it does, hopefully someone will remember that we were people who were willing to help them also.
And I wanted to say that because, you know, I'm not saying this to shade anybody in my family, but because I love my family, you know, everybody does what they do. But you guys, when I meet somebody for the first time who don't know me from Adam and is concerned that I got something to eat or my child, you know, I just want you to know that means something. It touches me in a real deep way. I don't want to get emotional because, you know, I'm supposed to be hard on TV, so I can't get emotional. People can't know that I'm a soft. But I just want you to know, you know, how much you've impacted me, you know, in doing this work. You know, you talk about the movie, just going back to the old movie Soul Food. And, you know, we talk about how it's more than just feeding somebody. You know, it is really a symbolic gesture. I've even told you ladies that you need to open up a restaurant, you know, because it's not just the food. It's the love that comes with the food. And, you know, I'm not trying to spend a lot of time on that, but because somebody is, oh, it's just food. What's the big deal? But it's a big deal. You know, when someone prepares something for you, it's a sacrifice. You know, in some cultures, I mean, it really, and I would even say in the Black culture, but it truly is a tradition of showing love and humble and humility to prepare a meal for somebody. You know, anybody can go out and buy a meal, but it's different, you know, when you prepare a meal and lay it out the way you ladies do. Even though Tara be late, I'll bring it. She still eventually brings us stuff.
And it's going to be real good.
It's going to be real good. But it's not a time I haven't been to your house. Even if it's for a meeting, you got something. You know, it's get you a chicken wing or cheese or something. Kool-Aid for sure. I mean, it's always, you make sure that no matter what, that I'm fed. And ladies, you just don't know. I'm telling you. You really don't know how impactful that can be to somebody. So I want to thank you for that. Encourage, just let you know, I just want to thank you for that. And I want you to know that you have encouraged me in a way that no family has ever had before. Because last year was challenging. And it's not just because of George Floyd. It's because of a lot of stuff that went on last year. You know, pandemic. And you out here and you're fighting and you want to know why. You know, why are you fighting? You fight your own. You know, I just did a live this morning where I'm trying to explain, you know, all the different sides of, you know, the Mekhi Bryant situation, because I can see people attacking our activists. You try to bring logic, you know, so that we can know how to move forward. You have to deal with all of the triggers in your life that reminds you of pain. You have to fight white supremacy. And it's so many of those things that happen. And a lot of times from my standpoint, we don't get recharged or refilled. And I guess that's why I'm spending so much time harping on the meals more than just, you know, the pork chops. Is really somebody saying, you know, I want to make sure you're good, that you're filled. Have you ate? You know, have your baby ate? Do you want to bring home a plate? Hey, you welcome to come over. You know, we cooking. That just means something, y'all, to me. Because it takes a lot to stay in this. And it's not always somebody patting you on the back, you know, saying, keep doing it, keep going, keep going. They just assume that you're strong enough. I haven't got so many calls in the last, since this trial, in my entire career, of people calling saying, damn, how do you do this? Mm-hmm. How do you do this? Because with them, it was just turning off the TV. Mm-hmm. And they certainly don't know from your standpoint of the actual grieving. Right. But people that I talk to every day say, how do you do this? And I'm like, are you just now paying attention to what? Like, this is all the time, back to back to back to back trauma. And you don't get refilled a lot. And you ladies have done that. When we talk about the trial and all of the things that you had to manage, Sarita, you have really shown me what a woman of faith is about. And I'm not just talking about just, you know, got faith, because I got faith too, but I'm a little bit, the Lord working on me in a whole lot of areas. the Lord working on Tara too. But Sarita, when I tell you this is a woman that keeps the main thing, and is unbothered, I've never seen nothing like it. How do you, for one, you got to keep up with baby sister.
Yeah.
Even though she a full-grown woman. So, and full-grown married woman, you got to keep up with baby sister. How, tell me about the rock that you stand on, Sarita.
Well, you know, Tez, to be quite honest, and I know I say this a lot, and it's the truth. I have learned over the years, because I've had, this is a tragedy, but I've had a few of them. And the one constant thing in my life has been, you know, God and my faith has been able to support me through all of it. And so I learned probably from the very first one, that's who I can lean on in those difficult times. And, you know, a lot of times people will say that and it becomes like a cliche. But as my grandmother used to say, I tried him for myself. And when I did that, it made all the difference in the world. It allows me to be able to go to a place and to, you know, be relaxed and refuel and be able to get back on the horse again whenever I fall off. Because trust me, there are times when it gets very challenging, but it's my relationship with Christ that helps me to be able to just keep going, because he has shown me time and time again that when I place my trust in him, that he will never fail me. And so that's what I have to do. And I have to do it not just for myself. I have to do it for my family members and other people around me, because I know that they're struggling with it. And it's because he has delivered for me so many different times. I know that he doesn't just do it for me. So that's really what it is. I mean, I have just seen it and I've tried it. And it's the only thing that's consistently worked, because I have a strong support system. Like, my mom and dad are always there, whatever, but they have their own struggles too. And so he is greater than all of us, and he can handle my struggles and their struggles and everybody else's struggles at the same time. So it's my faith that keeps me going. It's my relationship with him. And if it requires me to go off into my own quiet space, which I often have to do when people don't even know that I've gone off and just me and him, to say, Lord, I gotta do this. I have to stay strong and I have to stay focused. Because not everybody can remain laser focused, especially with all the noise that's going on around you and all the distractions that try to take you away from what the main thing is. And so when I feel like I'm getting to that place, I dip off, try a little Jesus and come back.
I try a little wine and then I come back. But I just wanted to say that, because, you know, there's been so many interviews about George, and I, you know, I'm not trying to take away from that, but I think it's important that people know who you guys are as people. You've done, I think on last week, at least 30 plus interviews, and all of them are about George, and that is important. But I want people to know, I wanted to take this time so that they know who you guys were, who is carrying on his legacy, the people that you are, and also to give people flowers while they're living. You know, we just watched DMX service, and Swizz Beatz stood up and said, give people their flowers while they're alive. Don't wait till somebody move on, you know, and go on to give their flowers. And that's why I'm really trying to get down to that people know who you are. And I wanted to say that again, Sarita. I have, you have really challenged me in ways, you know, to make sure, as professional as I think I am, as together as I think I am, I have certainly learned from you in that way.
Thank you for saying that.
I have. You are truly a rock. With that said, let's talk a little bit about the trial in our remaining time, on what that was like hearing that victory. Or do you think it was a victory? We know we have more work to do, but just for a moment, in celebrating that victory, what did that mean to you?
I absolutely think it is a victory. You know, I believe in celebrating victories, big and small. And in the big scheme of things, you know, it for me, it wasn't just about George. Like, this trial was certainly about Derek Chauvin and him murdering George. But I saw it as something that was like, it was a victory for everybody else who had gone before. And on the other side, we just end up with the cops just didn't get charged, or they weren't convicted, or if they did, they got a slap on the wrist, or whatever the case may be. For me, it was so significant because it was almost like validating what everybody else was saying all along, is that, you know, now people can actually see us. They see what we're contending with. As easy as it should have been for everybody to be able to see what happened to George, it wasn't a foregone conclusion that we would get a conviction. It's very difficult to get 12 people to do anything, much less for all of them to agree on, you know, without having any reasonable doubt. I certainly felt like it was a victory, and I celebrated as I was watching it. And I don't know, somebody somewhere probably has this on footage, because I wasn't even focused in on what was going on around me. But I remember when I heard the first conviction and the tears started to roll. By the time the third one came along, I was a mess. I was a mess. My daughter was a mess. I think everybody was. We were just kind of all crying. And it really was a release, because I think I shared with somebody, I didn't even realize the weight that was that I was carrying until after that, because suddenly it was just like I was able to release and I felt lighter afterwards. So I certainly felt like, you know, we're going to celebrate this win, but we're not going to get stuck there, because, you know, oftentimes, you know, people will become complacent after, you know, you get this one. Well, number one, we have three other murderers that need to be convicted. And then this movement is something that I think is important for us to take advantage of. Right now, the momentum is good. For I think people are listening, you know, eyes are open. The world is, you know, focused in on what happens next. And I believe that there are people who have certainly demonstrated that they have an interest in helping at this point. And so it would be sad if we didn't capitalize on the fact that there are people who see us and who are interested in seeing the social justice movement move forward. So I'm excited about what lies ahead. I know it's a lot of hard work, but I think this gives us, you know, sort of a little jolt, if you will, a little bit of energy to keep going forward, you know, like, so that's why I think it's important to celebrate this win, but then we got to stay focused on the big picture and know that there's still a lot left to be done.
Tara, you know, we're all women of faith, but there's always a time where you ask the Lord, why me? You know, why did you choose my family? Why? It could have happened to any family. When you ask yourself that question, because I'm sure you did, but all of the things that come with this is what people don't understand. A documentary is coming out later this year of Attorney Crump showing not just this family, but all of the things that he does. People have no idea. Behind the scenes, the pressure, the ugly things that you hear from the public, the messages, all of those negative messages over and over and over. When you asked God that question, Tara, what did he say? Did he answer you?
I'm going to say you're absolutely right. I did ask myself that a few times. And I had to remind myself that, you know, God gives his toughest battles to his toughest soldiers. And so I had to tell myself, why not me? Why not me? You know, and I have my moments where I feel weak, but I understand that he doesn't make mistakes. So I realized once we were placed in this position, we had to move, like we had to do what it takes. And so, yeah, we had difficult times, but he definitely answered me. And that was my answer. That was my answer.
What was the verdict like for you, Tara?
The verdict was, for me, there was so much buildup. And it's kind of like Sherita described. we were carrying around this burden that we didn't even know we had. Because when I got the phone call from Ben saying that the verdict was in, I literally started shaking. And I had a feeling that we were going to get the conviction. But, you know, having to trust the system that we have seen fail us time and time again, I was nervous. I was very nervous about it. And so after hearing the first, you know, first guilty on the first account, yeah, I did have tears, but it was kind of like by the time we reached the third one, the floodgates opened up and I thought they were never going to close. But it was definitely, it was a feeling like I've never had before in my life. And I will tell you, it felt so good. But I agree with Sherita. You know, we enjoyed that moment, but I knew immediately that you know, this is not it. Like, we can celebrate this right now, be in this moment, but there's work to be done. So yeah, it was definitely a good feeling. At least it gave us the sense that, you know, what we already knew is that somebody needed to be held accountable, and those jurors got it. They got it. So that was a good feeling.
If the other officers, let's say they don't get convicted, you know, for aiding and abetting, and they get away with that, I think there's a strong possibility that they will, because, you know, obviously he was convicted. And so if you're saying he was convicted of a felony of murder and somebody else was aiding and abetting, he was already been convicted of murder. So it's pretty much said that it was a murder. But each case is different. How the prosecutor presents that case is different. If it does not go in our favor, and we want to think positive, but if it does not go in our favor, do you think, Sarita, it would take away from the justice we received? Or do you really look at it as, you know, the weight of this was on Derek Chauvin? So no matter what, you know, we've accomplished something. But how much are you depending on those other, you know, three officers to also be convicted?
Well, I'm not really depending on it. I think you kind of said it, stated it well. I certainly feel like that Derek Chauvin conviction was the one that we really wanted to see happen. I think the judge probably viewed it the same way, which is why Chauvin was tried separate from the other three. And I still have a strong belief that they will probably end up with a conviction. But for me, it really isn't going to change anything in terms of my commitment to doing the work and to trying to make sure that we see true change. It won't change that for me. Of course, we would like to see everybody convicted, but at the same time, I think the major one was Derek Chauvin. And so for me, I won't say that, you know, I'll be happy with the other people getting off, but I can say that at least this is something that'll still give me enough energy to say we can still move forward and continue the fight.
You know, Tara, a lot of people say, oh, you know, George would be happy now. He would see the justice is done. And, you know, I'm always quick to say George want to be alive. You know, let's first get, I'm sure George would want to see it be alive. I'm sure he would want to walk his daughter Gianna down the aisle. I'm sure, you know, that would be something that he would want. But through the grieving process, you have to tell yourself, you know, that your loved one, I don't want to say tell you, so you have to believe, you know, that your loved one is at rest and at peace. Do you believe that now that this conviction has happened, that his soul can rest? Or do you think it was resting before this? Because we, as women of faith, we know that to be absent with the body is what?
Be present with the Lord.
Mm-hmm. That's it. Yeah. So it was never depending upon a conviction or not. But do you think, you know, at least for his spirit, or, you know, or just knowing, okay, because we got him. You know, do you feel that energy as well?
Yeah, I definitely feel like he can rest now, knowing him, you know, the way that I did. After he lost his mom, he really struggled a lot with, you know, just being okay, you know, because he was, you know, very much attached to his mother, the same way we are to our mother. You know, we have that connection. And so for him, it was the kind of loss that I don't think he was ever fully going to recover from. So he was struggling with that. And probably among other things he was trying to accomplish, you know, and he struggled with that. So I know that being alive is what we all want. Selfishly, I know that I would prefer to have him here, but I do understand, you know, again, that, you know, being our faith will have us to believe that, you know, this was not a mistake. So he's where he needs to be. And I'm sure that he is somewhere wrapped in his mother's arms. And so if he could be proud, I know that he would be. I know that he would be happy with the outcome.
And just to clarify that, because everybody who's listening may not be a believer, so I want to clarify that. When she says not a mistake, we're not saying that Chauvin did not make a mistake, that he did not commit murder, that he should not be held liable. What we're speaking to, because I don't ever want people to assume that they know when we're coming from faith, you know, what they're talking about, because everybody has different faiths. So when Tara's saying not a mistake, it's saying that we trust God in all things, even the things that hurt us. Oh, yeah. Because, they like to twist it. And it's just because we all have different faiths, you know, and I don't know. I don't want to assume, you know, that my listeners understand, you know, what you meant when you said that. So before we get out of here, tell us something about George. We know he loved the ladies. That's for sure.
Yes.
So tell us something.
And they loved him back.
And they loved him back. Because he was so tall and a big man. And all the men in your family are that way. Tall, big guys. Tell us something about George, Sarita, that you can recall before we get out of here.
Well, this is probably something I don't know that nobody, probably with only the folks who knew him really, really close, that he was a nail biter. I don't know how he could do it and not like actually draw blood from him. I mean, it was amazing to me to watch him. It was something that really it really got on my nerves to see him doing it. But he was a nail biter. But beyond that, and a lot of people, he was somebody who just really liked to have fun. Like he had, it's a playful spirit, liked to dance around and just come, you know, just a playful, joyful person to be around. You know, kind of like you always talk about Tara entering the room and she's smiling. You know, he was the same way. He always had a smile on his face. And for the ladies in the family, especially, we knew he was going to get a pinch on the cheeks and a big bear hug. Something that I will miss. I knew no matter how long of a time span it was between when I saw him, I knew that I could count on getting one or both of those things whenever I saw him. And so I definitely will miss that.
Tara, anything you want to say before we close?
We just have so many, you know, childhood memories, and you know, she said it best. He was full of life. He was just that person that, you know, would do anything to make you smile. And you know, one of my favorite memories of when we were growing up in the Third Ward area is his mom would make beanie weenies. You know, for people who don't know what that is, that's the pork and beans in the can. Well, she would always add like the hot dogs and brown sugar to it, you know, with butter. Love. And oh, you remember that, Sarita. So he would always be excited about when we had that. So he would run and come get me, you know, come on, we can be the winners today. So that was just popped in my head just now when you was asking about memories of him. That was one of my favorite memories.
You know, I still make that,
back
right?
To the food. Oh, you do? Okay, you got a hoop. But I ain't nothing like some beanie weenie. Come back to the food, yeah. With the floors, y'all. I'm telling you, no matter what.
It always do.
It always, it starts and ends with the food. This is one soulful family. My main goal of this was just people to at least know who you are. You know, who is carrying on his legacy, who wants to make sure that the work is done. I encourage people to Google or go online, the georgefloydfoundation.com, look at the programs in youth services, in social justice and advocacy, in workforce development. There are so much that I know that you guys are working on, have been working on. In fact, over seven different, you know, program events you guys did just this year alone. So even despite going through everything you've been going through, still been doing the work. And I know you have so much more that you want to do in workforce development, particularly when we start talking about young men And men who may not want to go to college, you know, and have different options like George, you know, driving trucks or blue collar jobs or and still giving people access to scholarships and colleges and so forth. In fact, one of the first things that you guys did was partner with the Eddie Robinson. Yes. Eddie Robinson Foundation to get a scholarship. That was the first thing that you guys did. And that's the type of stuff, even though we had it in the media, that's the type of stuff that people don't see. You know, that's not the story that you hear back to back to back. You know, they love talking about George's background. But talk about what you're doing now in his name. You know, let's talk about the scholarship. Let's talk about you partnering with 100 Black Men, you know, to assist young people. Let's talk about, you know, all of the things with working with the Urban League and so forth of actually trying to do something positive. So I wanted to use my platform, you know, as an opportunity to do that because I don't expect mainstream media to do it. It's not their job. You know, it's all about the sensationalism. Let's talk about now. But I want to make sure that we always use at least my platform, my space, you know, as an opportunity to move forward. You have an event coming up. I know that you're working on in Houston for celebrating his 1 year life. Is that correct? Are those details available to share or will they be able to go to the website to find out moving closer to? Will that be open to the public's arena?
We are working on finalizing some things, but May the 29th is the date we're looking at doing this celebration. We're really excited about it. I think having this victory, if you will, just gives it even more cause for celebration because we'll be moving, looking at the anniversary, and then we'll be able to, you know, bring in the fact that energy from Derek Chauvin being convicted as well.
And then after that, I know you have an aggressive agenda this year with things you want to do in the program, in addition to while both of you ladies still work, just so people know you guys work full-time jobs and do this and have kids. It's just so much. I am so honored to be able to have an opportunity to meet you guys, work with you guys, learn from you guys, love on you guys. And I'm so grateful that you have, you know, spent this time with me and not just for this interview, but for the last year, almost daily or every other day. Just constant interaction. And I have learned so much and you've made me a stronger and better woman and advocate. And I hope, you know, we can continue to keep growing and loving on each other. So I want to thank you for coming by again, everybody. Please make sure you check out georgefloydfoundation.com. They will be back as we continue this conversation because once the cameras go away, once the hype goes down, the work must continue. And that is usually when the family needs the most support. You go on to the next case, you go on to the next issue, you go on to the next thing. But the main thing is keeping the main thing the main thing. When Reverend Al Sharpton met Sarita, he called her boss lady, general, right out the gate because she brings that type of energy, that spirit of true leadership. And I have learned from her. I consider myself a leader, but real leaders always learn. Real leaders are always open to grow, get better. How can I do this better? How can I say things better? How can I walk in a better spirit? How can I be the person that I need to be in order to make this movement count? And so I have learned that from these ladies, and particularly I've worked with the family, but I've had an opportunity to work one-on-one with these two women, and they have truly blessed my life. So thank you again, Sarita Tate and Tara Brown, the co-founders of the George Floyd Foundation. You can visit at www.thegeorgefloydfoundation.com. Thank you for listening. If you like what you heard on Straight Shot No Chaser, please subscribe and drop a 5-star review and tell a friend. Straight Shot No Chaser is a production of the Black Effect Podcast Network and iHeartRadio. I'm Tesla Figaro, and I'd like to thank our producer, editor, mixer, the one and only Marcy DePina, our mix master, Dwayne Crawford, and our executive producer, Charlamagne Tha God. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.